Do you like the Star Wars? Well, you've come to the right place because this is the Rancor Pit, and we are really liking some Star Wars here today. I'm Cole Jedi Cole Houston, and with me, as always, is my incomparable co-host.
Eddie Medina, fresh off of my guest appearance on Hey Kids Comics.
Yes, indeed.
But so no one gets worried. I have no wine tonight, and I have my pants on. So this will not spiral it downward like
Yeah.
Hey
No, no drink, and I just had a milkshake earlier, so
So
I'm a little sugar buzzed, but that's about as far
as long as
as
you're not lactose intolerant, you should be fine in that respect.
I have no problem with lactose. I have never had any problem with lactose. But at any rate, basically, we are not only just fresh off of the recent Hey Kids Comics appearance of Eddie Medina, Eddie and I are freshly off of the off of Infinicon 2016, which is a brand new convention in Dallas that was held at the Crowne Plaza, where Alcon spent most of its life so far. And it was a first time show. As such, a little bit smaller attendance, but those who were there had an absolutely wonderful time.
Oh my
Everybody
gosh,
we talked
yes.
to was just thrilled, and it made for kind of a more intimate experience for a lot of us, so that was a lot of fun too.
It was almost like, and this is not a bad thing because, again, I've been doing nothing but telling people you've got to plan for Infinicon 2 next year.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
You missed out big time. But what it felt like was it was almost as if you were at Alcon on like maybe a preview night or a VIP night where it was like they were only limited onto who they could let in, you know, because it was,
Exactly.
and that's I think that's what made it so cool. It's like it's like you're on the chosen few or something, you know.
Yeah, in fact, I told somebody or mentioned in one of my shows is, we can kind of count ourselves like the English army and Henry V, few, we happy few. And so there
And
you have
we
it.
could say that we were there at the beginning.
Exactly. If you weren't at AllCon 2005, but you were at Infinicon 2016, you had a feel of what it was like in 2005, and it's just a lot of fun. Unfortunately, most of my day at AllCon 2005 was spent in the dealer room that was basically a piece of the action collectibles, which meant that Catherine and I spent most of our day being the dealer room. But
Yeah, that's true.
we this time I got to play, and that was really nice. Eddie and I got to MC the co-host of the costume tournament on Friday. We both got to do the Galactic Games live at a convention for the first time. And that was just dynamite. If you have not already seen it, look for the archive on the live show for Sunday, August 21st, where we talked about Eddie Sack.
And pretty soon you'll be able to watch the Galactic Games 3 in full on the YouTube
Oh, that's
channel.
right. That'll be
So you
coming
can
soon.
see my sack in HD.
Yes, indeed. And you'll get to see a lot of people fondle Eddie Sacks.
That's true. I did have an army of sacks with
He
me.
had a lot of sacks, and they all got fondled.
Well, the good thing is every
Once you
sack
have the
used.
context on this, it won't sound near as dirty.
Yeah, and I will say all the sacks used are recyclable, so they are green, you know. So
So
we're
when we
very
play
conscious of
blue, we also play green, it appears.
that.
It's kind of brings it down into sort of an aquamarine, as it were. But
Sure.
it was just, we're still just giddy from that weekend. It was so much fun. And it was
And
such a.
we packed a lot of Star Wars into the weekend.
We did. We had the Do You Like the Star Wars Game Show on Friday. We had the Galactic Games on Saturday. We did the Rancor Pit Live, or the Rancor Pit Live on stage.
On Sunday, yeah.
Sunday, yes. We
I
had.
did something else Star Wars. I guess I'm thinking that because everywhere we went, we were handing out
Oh,
our
yes.
trading cards. Oh, we did the podcast summit, which we got to plug the Rancor Pit quite a bit on that. So that kind of.
Absolutely, yeah. The Taffeta Darling did the DFW
podcast community?
Or video casters or something like that. Yeah, we had the DFW podcasting community where a lot of us got together and got to talk about our shows, about podcasting, and kind of spread the word about the phenomenon of podcasting, how much fun that is.
Yeah.
And so one of the big highlights, of course, of the weekend, the show had three celebrity guests. We had Bill Blair, who is a Guinness Book of World Record holder for most makeup roles in movies and television.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that. I was talking to the man for like 2 days, and that never came up. Wow.
He's a fascinating, fun guy. He was actually...
Wow.
He was at AllCon 2005. He was one of the guests there.
Mm-hmm.
And, here 13 years later, 12 years later, how cool to, get to see him again and,
right.
and that sort of. And what was really neat is, whether he had a decent sized crowd or just a handful of people, he would go and do his presentation and do his talk and reminisce. Yeah. And the same was true for the other two guests who were the Star Wars guests.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Carlton from of the Star Wars Super Collectors Wish Book had put the guests together and got a couple of really cool guests. We had Dickie Beer,
uh-huh.
who has appeared at a lot of shows. He's a stuntman and nowadays a stunt coordinator as well, who is still incredibly active to this day. Right before the show, Eddie, you were marveling at how his filmography just goes on and on.
Well, I was, and we'll talk about it more in length later, but I was just in awe of the man after sitting down and talking to him one-on-one or in our little group of people, and was just amazed at the man. But afterwards, just looking up and studying, the more you looked up his stuff, you're more like, oh my gosh, this guy is like royalty when it comes to being in movies that everyone knows, everyone's heard of these movies. It wasn't like, he was like in, the Cheerleader Massacre movie or something like that, something that no one's ever heard of. But he's been in like blockbuster after blockbuster after blockbuster, so I can't wait to get into that.
Yeah, apparently I didn't realize this, he'd had some uncredited stunts in the Avengers.
Mm.
I don't know if that's 1998, so that's probably, is that the...
Oh, that's the...
the prim and proper British one, not the...
Yes, not the spandex one.
Okay, well, in that case, I can see why you wouldn't want to be credited.
What? No one's going to argue with you on that one.
Yeah, luckily for him, he did not do any stunts in The Revenant, so whoever had to do the bear stunts, I'm sure...
Okay, I'm not sure if I want to see this movie then.
But
harsh.
Dickie Beer is a fascinating guy to talk to. If you ever see him on the bill for a convention, go and if he's doing panels, sit down and listen to this man. Fascinating tales about Hollywood, about the film process, about the stunt process. He's actually one of the pioneers of the airbag. He said back in the day, used to when you did a fall stunt, it was very limited how far you could fall because you were falling onto empty cardboard boxes.
Yeah, wow.
That were built up, by the way. They weren't just like all flat.
Really?
Yeah. First, you do that one time, and then you realize, oh, we should have built them up.
Oh, my gosh.
And what was really neat about that was that in one of the panels, Dickie was talking about the fact that, producers are always looking to stretch a buck. Mm-hmm. And when you build up, 200 boxes, you're landing on about 30 of them.
Yeah.
And to them, it looks like, why did we buy 200 boxes?
Yeah.
And it's like, because you need the others there. Because
to play it safe, just in case.
Yeah, so he said that, that was getting to the point where there were less and less boxes being invested in. And
eventually it whittled down to like a Jenga tower of just cardboard boxes.
Just aim here or else. you're a stuntman.
Let's hope the wind doesn't pick up and just tip it over before he jumps.
That's right. But the interesting thing is he was talking about the airbag, that matter how you fall onto an airbag, you always land on your back. That is the number one rule. If you're falling forward, you're flipping, you're twisting, falling sideways, backward, whatever, you must always time it to land on your back.
Okay.
Because that's the way it works. You need to put as much of yourself across there to
yeah.
break down that, to open up those bladders and then let it deflate. And you definitely don't want to land on your front, because that just, I can imagine that would snap some parts of you.
Well, yeah, it'd be like belly flopping into a pool, I imagine, but
exactly.
much more severe.
Like in a frozen pool. And the other really cool guest also with a – and Dickie Beer was brought in for his Return of the Jedi pedigree, by the way.
Yeah.
He oftentimes, if you see him on shows, they'll play up the fact that he was Boba Fett stunt double.
Yeah.
There's a story behind that that we'll get to a little later, but he was actually, as he put it, he was originally brought in to for the Jabba's skiff stuff as Barada.
Barada.
Who, you know, we've always known him as Barada.
Yeah.
I am now forever going to call him Barada because that sounds much better.
It's much more lyrical.
Yeah,
than it's proper sounding.
It's like you know, rich Corinthian leather of.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And so, I found out he was also one of the Rebel Commandos on Endor. You probably, yeah, you know, I'm sure he's one of many, many, but there's a still shot of him in the whole getup.
Yeah, in fact, he was brought in primarily to for Endor as a Rebel Commando and also a Stormtrooper.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, okay.
So he is among the rank and file Stormtroopers. And then his role in Jedi got expanded. But that, again, like I said, we'll have another story there. The other is an actor by the name of Gerald Holm. And in addition to being a fairly prolific actor in the UK, he had also come fresh off a stint of about a year with a mime troupe.
Yeah.
So he his agent sent him to an audition for this movie, this Return of the Jedi, coming up. And they were auditioning mimes because they wanted they were going to have so many costume characters in Jabba's palace. They wanted a lot of them to really stand out, and they needed actors who could project beyond the costume.
Yeah.
And he said they went in, it was like 100 or something, and Gerald would you know, be sure and very politely let me know how wrong I was if it was like 200 or 300. But they started out with a very large pool and then whittled it down and whittled it down. And he ultimately became amongst like the dozen or so who were brought in. And he became the character colloquially known as Squidhead.
Uh-huh.
And later known as Tessic. He said, you know, back then they didn't have names.
Mm-hmm.
And he also plays him on Calamaria Officer on the deck of the – he's actually right there milling around behind Admiral Ackbar much of the movie.
Yeah, there's that deleted scene on the Blu-ray set where it comes – his part comes up right after the famous, "It's a trap." Off to the side, the camera then they go to the next shot where a door opens up and it's the restroom and he yells, "It's a crap."
Yeah. It really, I think there are some scenes that make it on the cutting room floor that really belong there.
Right.
I think that actually would have moved the story forward.
I think it would,
or at least moved his Mon Calamari bowels.
Yes, thank you. Gosh.
Which, by the way, we have an upcoming episode. I think next in 2 weeks, our next episode is going to be about Rogue One, our own stuff. And I was watching a trailer about, or a trailer breakdown online. I think it's like Mr. Sunday or something like that. And the very bombastic Australian-sounding guy was just going on and on about stuff. And he talked about, apparently, Ackbar's first name is Giel.
Giel?
Giel Ackbar.
Where? What?
Yeah, he had like
where does that come from?
I think it may be in Wikipedia or something like that. I haven't bothered to check, but since we're talking about Mon Calamari, I had to bring this bit of madness to the forefront.
Yeah. Okay.
But
Giel.
Giel Ackbar. So yeah, it's not at all derivative Lucasfilm.
Gosh.
Yeah, there you
go. That's almost like That's almost as bad as John Byrne naming
Yes.
the
Oh.
Alpha Flight character, Canadian character, Puck.
Yes.
Because hockey is big in
That's
Canada.
right. Oh yeah, well,
Oh, thank you, John Byrne.
don't get me all into Hey Kids comics, but the actual absolute worst John Byrne character ever was Goody Two-Shoes.
Oh, but can we blame him or his wife for that?
Yeah, that might have been his wife. I know she was
I was going to
responsible
say,
for
because she
Gilded
came up with those.
Lily and Deadly Earnest and a couple of the other
Yeah, she
Alpha Flight
fancied
shows.
herself a hoot when it came to a play
Yeah,
on words
he
and
fancied it
names.
was a good idea to be able to be allowed to sleep in the bedroom if he.
Right. Right. But anyway.
So yeah, that what's neat is a lot of times you'll see people build at these conventions, and you're kind of like, why? But the reality is, if you go and listen to the panels, you discover a wealth of behind the scenes information. Gerald Holm is another. If you ever get this chance to see him panel, he is a fascinating, witty, fun, and incredibly personable.
Oh man,
I
so
just
much
love the
energy.
man. And in many ways, he and Dickie couldn't have been more opposite in their presentation, but they were both equally fascinating. And they both, once you got them, I moderated three panels with them. And once you got one of them started talking, you really had to kind of angle in there to get a chance for the other one to talk. And then the same was true. It was like, but because both of them are so rich with a wealth of things, I could have done hours and hours with both of them and would not have run out of tales.
And
And,
I'm glad you brought that up because that's the thing about the two of them. Gerald was very energetic and very bouncy, and he reminds me of an old mathematics teacher I had in college. Dickie was much more sitting back in his chair, reserved, quiet, but just like
I
cool
know. He was just like
get out like.
spinning these yarns about like what it takes to become a stuntman.
It was almost as if you were talking to the Fonz and Richie Cunningham. You love them both, but they're so different one from the other.
The Fonz and Richie.
Am I
That's a
lying?
good ad hoc I had not thought about. I'm actually reflecting back on the weekend, like, damn, that'll the Fonz and Richie Cunningham.
I felt like Ralph Mouth, and you would have been what's a Potsy?
I'm the Potsy. Okay. That actually works, I guess.
Ralph Malph. I guess you're both kind of redheadish, and I'll be yeah. Okay. Anyway.
I still got it. Gerald Holm is originally from Ireland, from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and Dickie Beer from Netherlands. And they're both what's really fun to me was to listen to them. Like Dickie would be talking about certain things going on in Hollywood. He'd be like, they had this, then we would do come out on the set, we would do our preparations and yada yada yada. And I'm like, wow, yada 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 has become international. Or maybe it was originally Dutch term. I don't know.
And Seinfeld stole it from the Dutch. Is
yeah,
that what
yeah.
you're
I very possible. And
saying?
what I loved on the other side of that coin, that international flair, was that Gerald would tell tales and then he would autocorrect to American English. I'm trying to remember some of the terms he used, but it would be like if somebody said, if he had said something like, well, this woman came up with a baby, with a pram, a baby carriage, it would like just. He would say the very British European English term and immediately slash the other term.
Oh gosh,
It was great. So like, just in case you haven't watched a lot of Monty Python or British comedies or a lot of like Remains of the Day or all those haughty British or what is it, Downton Abbey. So for the unfamiliar, he would autocorrect to allow you to be.
I think you mean Downtown Abbey.
Oh no, you're thinking of downtown Arby's.
Oh, Downtown Arby's. Oh,
Remember
okay,
the
that's
time we needed some Arby's? We were downtown. For some reason, they had an all British staff. It was weird.
Right. I know, it was kind of
Oh, well,
strange.
tell me, we help you. Did not sound at all British.
It sounded like something though.
Perhaps they weren't British at all.
It sounded like a Fraulein from like an old 70s British porn movie or something.
Wow.
May I help you? Take off your pants?
Delicious.
It's a Wiener Schnitzel. No. Whoa, hold on.
So what were some of the surprising things you yourself found, you know, within the stories that you were able to hear?
Well, you know, they both had so many. I will take a moment and preface this. We have touched on some of our experiences with these two gentlemen on the live show. So make sure you go back and watch our live broadcast.
Absolutely. There may be a little bit of overlap, but for the most part, we're going to try to keep it new.
Cole floored us with the Gamorrean Garg tale. And
Yeah.
You don't want to miss that one. That was something else.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that an exclusive to the live show. You really want to, because you need to see everybody's reaction.
Yeah, that was something else. But I think it, just to hear them approaching their craft from different points of view. Gerald was approaching it much more from a proper actor, and Dickie from like a thinking man, like a man who he's problem solving as he's working on set the whole time. Whereas Gerald is working on staying in character, you know, his blocking and all that. But one story that Dickie told, which was, it just goes to prove how wasteful Hollywood can be. When he was talking about being on the set of Entrapment, you know, the Sean.
Oh, that's right. Yes. What a tale.
Yeah. Sean Connery and, oh, I'm drawing blank, you know, the beautiful Michael Douglas's wife. Oh, crap. Oh, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, there was a scene where they left in a pristine sports car, Porsche or something or other, some Maserati, something that was like very expensive. I mean, that you're just not going to see every day.
That's right. Yeah, it was. And, like a Maserati or something. I remember him telling about that.
And the next scene, they arrive at the hotel, wherever their destination. And if you look closely, he says, it's all beat up. It's been through the ringer. He said, what you didn't see was this whole long chase sequence through a tunnel where in the process 30 to 40 cars were destroyed. They narrowly escaped with their lives, and it was something that they filmed. Did he say 2 or 3 weeks? Do you remember, Cole?
It was at least 2 weeks. Yeah, it took a long ass time to film this.
Right.
Because
that's a lot of money spent.
Yeah, exactly. This, the sheer volume of cash expended on the time alone was insane.
I mean, you're talking permits to block off streets. You're talking about paying everyone, set people, lighting people, sound people, catering, wardrobe, extras. I mean, all this stuff.
Stunts.
That goes in.
I mean, because you have to have your stunt riders.
Yeah, all of that goes with it. All everything, the whole shebang, for 2 to 3 weeks, every day, whole day. I mean, that's a lot of money you can imagine spent.
Well, also, so the other neat thing about that tale was that the scene takes place in a tunnel.
Yes.
And what was neat is it said that when you do tunnel scenes, you don't like set up the cameras on one end of the tunnel and shoot all that stuff and you go to the other end. You're basically just shooting everything on the same same side of the tunnel.
Yeah.
You just reverse your angles. Hope nobody notices.
Yeah.
You know, you redress that side of the location a bit. Uh-huh. And so, you know, that's why it takes so long, because they're having to shoot everything going into the tunnel. And then they have to, you know, get all the stuff on the other side once the car is even more beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And then stuff within the tunnel. So do go on.
Well, they go through the whole shebang of doing that bit for 2 to 3 weeks. And they get the scene edited together. They Sean Connery, being one of the producers of the movie, he gets to the point where they show him the scene. And Sean Connery doesn't like it. He feels that it's not in line with his character that he's playing to do something like that, I guess, so over the top and dangerous.
Yeah.
To other people with all that, you know.
For whatever reason, it just did not sit well with the man. And he was a producer on the film, so he mixed it.
Yeah. He just, it's out of there. It's out of there. He did like an umpire. he did like the whole baseball umpire, but hey, you're out of there. But yeah, so they cut it. They cut it after 3 weeks of work. And just imagine the disappointment of those involved, you know, giving their best, the craft, behind putting something like that together, and for it to not be appreciated by an audience. That's what would get me.
Yeah, in fact, one of the things he talked about often, and the reason he doesn't go to see movies himself, is often, excuse me, oftentimes he'll be working on a movie and stuff will just, like this is a huge example of how much just disappears. It just doesn't happen. And you're like, we worked hard on that. And, I can imagine the pride you take in your work, and then all of a sudden it's all for nothing. And in many cases, no one will ever see that. Some of that didn't even make it to even to the editor
Frustrating, I'm
never
sure.
saw it. Yeah. So, it's really an amazing stuff he was talking about because of the little things that go on behind the scenes. Like, at one point he was talking about working on Empire of the Sun, and he said that there was a scene that Spielberg wanted where Jamie is running up through the building and the camera is tracking him all the way up to the top to where he sees the US the bombers coming in. And back then, he said there was like this, camera rig, this gigantic camera rig that they literally put on top of another rig that was an even heavier duty rig. And literally pushed, one rig pushed the other one up to a certain height, and then its crane then went up all the way to the top of the building. And all of this was perched on this giant mountain of dirt. And you're like, this has to be the most dangerous, ill-conceived.
It's like when you have that one uncle who you go to visit and he does something crazy, like you're in the garage helping him clean out the garage, and he puts a chair on top of a box, which is sitting on top of a skateboard, which is sitting on top of something else, and it's just teetering, and he's climbing up this thing to reach something in the
And he
rafters.
doesn't have any empty cardboard boxes to
No.
land
Nice.
on.
That's what I imagined. It's like, is that, or to take it back to episode one and Lot Dodd, is that legal?
Wow.
So yeah, yeah. So, but he, oh, anyway, you were telling the story about, and how did the shot turn out? He said, you
Oh,
know,
yeah,
it's.
the shot actually comes out, as you can see on screen, very fluid. But he said, nowadays they would just have this rig that's a cable, and you just program in what you want. You do a run through, you program in your tracking, and the computer does it all for you. And it was just kind of like, you don't think of these sorts of things that go on. And Gerald, equally so, was talking about how he, knew who a lot of these people were. He'd been spent a number of years trying to figure out who everybody was in Jabba's palace and track a lot of those folks down to help people identify the who's who, especially at the point where people got interested in having some of these guys as guests. Several years ago, I got to I'm drawing a blank on his name again, as I did at Infinicon. Bobby Clark, who
Oh, the Gorn?
Yes, his by his own admission, he comes just shy of calling it a laughable claim to fame. It's the stunt man. He was a stunt man and actor in Hollywood, very prolific as well.
Oh, yes. Big
And
time.
he just happened to be the one they hired to put on this big rubber lizard suit and fight William Shatner. And that was just a little footnote in his long career. It's like, well, I'm done with this. I'll go be, fall off a horse on Gunsmoke next week or what have you. He just did what he did and never thought twice about it. And then apparently I was telling this story at one of the panels, asking our guests, what has it been like to suddenly be, convention guest is one of your. Of your jobs nowadays, one of the things you get paid to do, that phenomenon. And I told the story. I could not remember his name to save me, but Bobby, I got to talk to him extensively at a little show many years ago, and he was talking about his son had said, you know, they've got all these Star Trek conventions, Dad, you should go and be a guest at them, sign autographs and make some money. And he said, why would anyone care? And his son one day brought him a little figurine of the Gorn. He said, okay, apparently somebody gives a damn about this stupid lizard. And I think he said he had like 100 each of, or had like 100 photos that were just some of his personal photos that he had that the makeup man had taken with his personal camera of him in costume. And he just had about 100 of them blown up and into 8x10s and went to this weekend show, and by the end of the first day, he had nothing left to autograph because he didn't think anyone would care. And again, this was a situation where there were so many tales to tell. But what was fascinating is it was Dickie Beer said it was his daughter that got him into conventions. He's like, Dad, you know, he's like, what? I was barada. It's like,
You like that, don't
who cares? I loved that. That was wonderful.
you?
And then with Gerald, because the other thing that came up was like, did you know that you were stepping into this phenomenon? You were going to be part of this thing that was just bigger than life. And Gerald was saying, yeah, well, he was very familiar with the Star Wars saga. And Dickie was like, it was just, he'd never heard of Star Wars. It was just another job. He was hired to put on some suits and fall off of things.
And that's the thing about that was just stunning me when I started researching Dickie Beer is the man has been in freaking everything. Everything. I mean, I got all giddy to meet the guy at Infinicon because obviously because of his claim to fame with Star Wars, but also his claim to fame with the Indiana Jones saga.
Oh, that's right.
And
Yes.
you know, he was the thuggy guard in one and this, that, and the other. But beyond that, even, I mean, that's already impressive as it was. But then he's in James Bond movies. He's in Crawl. He's in Superman 3,
Oh, I know. It's
American
insane.
Werewolf in London. I mean, he has been in freaking everything that you are just go crazy over.
And as either a stunt man or a stunt driver, and what was interesting in hearing
Yeah.
him talk is the to qualify as a stunt man,
Oh, yes.
first you have to be registered as a stunt man,
Now, this is
or
overseas,
as to,
not
actually,
here.
yeah, overseas, or to be a stunt coordinator rather. You have to have done X number of, there are like several disciplines, and you have to have mastered, as it were, any number of these, like I think it was like six different disciplines, which are everything from like falls to scuba work to driving to flying to all manner of stuff. And you have to be able to prove work in, I think it's something like six different ones before
It
you
was,
can
yeah, I
become
think he said
a stunt
six.
coordinator, and therein, you know, put other stuntmen through their paces. And it was just wow stuff, you know, these things you never
Well,
think
yeah.
about.
You had to build up your rep in that respect to move on to the next level, which and then was a trial by fire through several steps in its own
Oh, yes.
before you moved on to the next. So it's like over there, they take it so seriously that you have to put in your blood, sweat, and tears over a matter of years and
Oh,
years and
like a
years.
decades even,
Yes, that's what
just
he was saying.
to
He said,
finally
whereas
hit that point.
in Hollywood, these guys are a dime a dozen because it's like, oh, you can practically lie about what you've done, and okay, then you're hired. And like, I mean, not to down the American part of filmmaking, but the fact is, it's much easier to do here. Hence, you have everyone and their dog is fighting over these
Oh
few
yeah, in fact, he
roles.
said that, you know, a lot of times stuntmen don't want it to get out that they got injured.
Yes, in
It's
America.
in America, yeah, because, you know, there's always somebody waiting in the wings to say, well, you know, I think they may be injured. I can always step in. And so it's yeah, like you say, it's a lot better off for those
It's very cutthroat.
yeah, it's a lot less so in the UK.
You said in the UK they watch each other's back,
Yeah.
and it's more of a camaraderie, and here it's a lot more competitive.
Absolutely. And then one of the fun things with Gerald was he was talking about his original agent had apparently passed away, and there were some documents that were being sent to his agent because all of the residuals are paid through your agent in the UK, apparently. And so the agent then, you know, that way they know what the what money's supposed to be coming in. They take their cut and the rest goes on to the actor or whoever. And this was like all of the call sheets and all of the records and everything about what everybody got paid, what everybody was promised, what percentages they got in the backside. Even right down to like for the Americans' social security numbers and all this information. And his agent had died, so it got forwarded on to him. So he's got like all these reams of documents and that stuff, which he said proved to be a wonderful resource for finding a lot of these actors.
I didn't even think about that
You
part of
know,
it.
and that was something he'd kind of taken on was trying to track these guy a lot of these guys down, you know, for this budding convention circuit. And he ultimately is like, you know, there was a point where there was a bit of a dispute as to how Dickie remembered certain things and how Gerald and Gerald would just was like winking away at me. And later he goes, you know, when I wink like that, I'm trying to tell you that there's something wrong. And he finally had to it's like very politely point out how wrong Dickie was about this particular things that because I've got all the records.
I love it.
And it was just, you know, it was like the
And
most
again, that shows you
polite scorning you could ever
right.
imagine.
Polite scorning. But that's what I love about those two. They were so polar opposite of one another,
I
but yet both were such gentlemen in their own right
Just
that.
wonderful. And of course, one of the highlights for me personally, very much like one of my all-con highlights, is that I'd done the panel with both of them on Friday, and then on Saturday morning, Catherine and I were, and I think Stephen Fett was down there with us, who, if you've seen the live show already, you know he was my surrogate brain for the weekend, and my literally right and left hand man. And he, we're all having breakfast down in the lobby or in the restaurant downstairs, and Gerald comes through and, you know, comes and joins us at table, and we just had a wonderful discussion with him there at the table as well. So it was just so much fun to be so involved and entrenched in these shows. And much like several years ago at AllCon when Camden Toy had come down for breakfast one morning, we were all sitting around, and he's like, "Oh, can I come sit with you?" Like, why would we refuse?
Do you have to ask?
Yeah,
Well,
so I
let me
said, "Time, do you realize your fame is diminished when you sit here?"
Can I take a moment, Cole, and jump in with
Absolutely.
something since you were talking about this? This is for those of you listening who have not been to AllCon or, in this case, Infinicon. What you're missing out is a very open, more intimate interaction with these celebrities that you do
Oh,
not get at the big shows.
yeah, you get like you know, a panel with a room full of people, maybe for an hour, and that's, you know, you might get to squeeze in some Q&A here and there. You might have the opportunity to talk to them extremely briefly, depending on how busy they are with their autograph lines at these big autograph shows. But you don't get that opportunity to sit around and talk, and in
You
fact,
won't. You won't. They because they at the big shows they have the handlers. They're going in back doors out. You know they're going to
yeah,
their
they're
cars.
just
You don't
disappeared
see them.
completely.
Yeah, you're not going to see them just wandering
You're
around by
not going to
themselves.
see the celebrities at, you know, at breakfast with the people involved in the show, or talking to you in the hallways, or, you know, engaging you in any way. And yeah, AllCon and Infinicon is very much like, with AllCon's permission, is very much like AllCon, in that I know for a fact that AllCon, their celebrity guests are contractually obliged to engage with the people at the show.
Yeah.
They're
So
actually obliged to go out and be a part of the outside of the show as well as the inside of the show.
yeah,
And
so
it's
they
not be all about the autographs.
you can easily just be walking the halls at the convention at the hotel and just strike up a conversation with one of their headliners, and it's not a big deal there. It's
Yeah.
like it's expected at all con
Yeah,
and
you
con
don't
because
have
that's
somebody coming and telling you back off, fanboy.
And let me tell you, this the worst I've ever experienced with that sort of thing was back when Wizard World was in Arlington, and it was if y'all were familiar with how they had to set up at the Arlington Convention Center there, and the big main long hallway that stretched through the facility, I was just leaning against the wall taking a break, and like literally like minding my own business and probably flipping through the stack of comics I had just bought. You know, make a note of which ones I need to mark off my checklist like a nerd. And lo and behold, like you would have thought the president was coming through. This sea of men came
Wow.
through with Jessica Biel in the middle. Well, I didn't even know it at first. And I'm just leaning again, leaning against the wall, looking down. They come by. I look up long enough to see why is there a circle of men coming this way? And the guy puts his hand as he's passing, puts his hand out and goes, "Sir, we're going to need you to stand back." And I was like, if I stand back even further, I'm going to meld with this wall.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think
It's
I
like,
am, Kitty Pride?
what? It's like, I was here first.
Yeah.
And I could care less that they were walking by. And the guy was like, "Sir, we're going to have you move back."
It's not like you were
Like,
there with a camera poised to.
oh, I know. It's all, it was the most ridiculous thing. And that all that to say, you're not going to get that at these shows.
Yeah.
It's too open and friendly for that nonsense.
Yeah, if you get the opportunity, AllCon 2017 in March, InfiniCon 2017 especially, in August of next year, don't miss out on these shows. They are so unique. In fact, there was a woman there. She was at so many things that I produced at AllCon this year
Yeah.
that in my brain, I inserted her and her daughter into AllCon for the past several years. This is how ubiquitous they were. And they were there at Infinicon here several months later, and with yet another daughter, and who this was her first time at one of these shows. And I think that was so cool. And I think it was Steven who pointed out, no, they had said that AllCon this year was their first convention ever. And they'd come down from Oklahoma, and it just and they were nearly like practically everything I did all weekend. At Infinicon, and the mom of the group there struck up a conversation with me. She was saying, "Well, AllCon's my favorite, and I love Infinicon, but are there more? What other shows can I go to like this?" And I felt terrible because here I am, tracking every convention in the state of Texas over at Cap Texas, and I'm running through my head, and I said, "Apart from LubbockCon." Coming up February next year. I cannot.
May, it got moved to May.
Oh, got to move. Oh, good. Oh, good to know because I'd be like booking my room and everything. Okay, it's awful quiet here in Lubbock.
All right.
But apart from LubbockCon next year, there was nothing I could recommend that was anything like AllCon and Infinicon because the Dallas-Fort Worth area forgot what it was like to have a convention that was a show with a dealer room attached. So many of these shows are a dealer room with a show attached.
What we
That's not
call,
cool.
what we call those are content-driven conventions,
Yeah.
and that's what these are, and that's what they used to be when Cole and I were going to them back in the 80s and into the 90s.
Oh,
Is
yeah. There was so much going on.
you went for the content, and then you would browse the dealer's room.
Well, for example, when some of the back in the days of the Dallas Fantasy Fairs,
Thank you.
I would go, I would go with my friends or my brother or others, and we'd go and we'd go get our ticket, we'd go get the program and start looking like, damn it, there's here at 3 o'clock, I want to go to three different things.
I
That's not
know.
fair. And that's what AllCon's like, and to a lesser degree, and I think this will be much bigger next year. In fact, it will be much bigger next year. Infinicon as well, where every hour there are five or six or 10 or 15 things going on simultaneously. Other shows, these autograph shows, you have, oh, this is from 1 to 2, and then from 4 to 5, there's this,
Oh yeah.
and that's it. there is no, there's no picking and choosing. Your only choice is, do I stand in line for 2 hours to get this autograph, or do I take those 2 hours to go see this presentation?
And people who you are more fairly newer to the convention scene, where they've become like the big autograph hound things, they don't understand what these evolved from. And so when they go to Infinicon or they go to AllCon and they see, good night, all this
Yeah,
content,
so many things
they
to
freak
do.
out. And I was like, shoot, this is old
Yeah,
school.
no, there's panels and workshops and presentations. In my
Yeah.
case, I pioneered the game shows with Catherine, and we brought game shows to Infinicon, and there's just so much neat stuff to do, and of course, like you were saying, the intimate involvement with the celebrity guests, and it became even more so with Infinicon on Sunday. I noticed that Tim had his panel, which is right before I was having the Sunday one with Dickie and Gerald, because by Sunday they weren't needing as many rooms. The big auditorium room, or the big theater room we were using on the first 2 days, was already closed down, so I had to go track down my guests to go get them to the right room, because we were all sort of like fire horses. We were all heading toward that room.
That's what you were used to.
Yeah, so we brought them into the ballroom, but I'd noticed when I went looking for them that the I think I misnamed him there, but they're Star Trek guests who I mentioned earlier, with all the costume. The makeup roles. God, drawing a blank on their third guest. But he was in there in his room. There were only two people attending his panel.
Yeah.
And instead of sitting behind a table in front of the
Bill
stage, Bill
Blair.
Blair, that's right, I call him
Sorry.
Tim for some reason. Yeah, but Bill was there. Instead of having, sitting at a table about 8 feet away from his two attendees, he just got a chair and turned around and was having a very intimate conversation with these two people. Coming, I thought that is brilliant. So when we got Dickie and Gerald all together, I said, "Why don't we just make a big circle of chairs here for everybody who was in attendance by then?"
Yeah.
And so Eddie and I got to have this wonderful, very intimate panel that I wanted Eddie to come in and help and moderate with me on this.
There was no need
Yeah.
because these two guys are so, like you said, it's like you open the corral and the horses know what to do.
Exactly.
And that's what these two guys are so
And the thing
professional.
is, you would never see if they had a minimal crowd at something at some of these big shows, they'd probably either just call it off, or they'd still, make you sit a mile away.
Yeah.
Here we are sitting, within a hair's breadth of their guests, and they're engaging everyone.
Yes.
And we just had so much fun. One guy had asked Dickie about, he and his wife were thinking about maybe traveling to Netherlands, about what the cuisine was like, and he pointed out that apparently most Dutch cuisine is imported. He said because Dutch food is boring. And
Yes.
so naturally, as the world opens up, I guess the Dutch decided, we'd rather go to an Italian place than a Dutch place, or a Mexican, or whatever, or Spanish, or you name it, anything. It's all potato based. It's just,
So they went ballistic when Del Taco came to
oh
town.
yeah, people came from kilometers away.
Know what they call it, Del Taco over there? Lou Del Taco.
Lou Del Taco. But Gerald then pointed out something about being careful you go to the coffee shops, and he said, "Well, they do sell coffee, but they also that's where you go to buy the hashish
Oh, yes,
and
that's right.
marijuana." And he was talking. One of the most fascinating things, he says, "Yeah, I used to smoke a lot of dope until they made it legal in Holland, and it just wasn't fun anymore."
Yeah. Yeah,
And then
the
that led to both of them.
gone.
It led to both of them telling about the first time they ever had smoked pot after years of abstaining. Having smoked
Oh,
pot in their
yes, that
youth.
was
And both of
genius.
them had been like, been years, decades since they ever bothered.
Yeah.
And they both had an occasion where they took one puff. And I think was it Gerald who was like, the story was he just got so paranoid.
I think that was Dickie.
Or Dickie, yeah, somebody went, they were like so paranoid.
I don't know now because
And
they
I know
both.
they kind of melded into each other, but they were both hilarious stories about how they just got so insanely high off of one puff
And
that they wanted
paranoid.
nothing to do with it.
Well, they were having to ride in the van with other stunt or
Oh,
actors,
yeah.
whoever it was, and were paranoid. Like they, it was Dickie because I remember his
Yeah, that's
voice
right.
on the story. I
It
remember
was
how
like
he
the
told
cops
it.
were following the whole way.
Yes, he was like, "You know they're gonna know we were smoking." He was like, "No one's gonna know. Calm down."
And then he goes
It's
and
almost as
hides in
if he
his
had like an
hotel room.
it's almost like it had been so long, his body had like an allergic reaction to
Yes, it
those
was. I mean,
performances.
where do you get these stories? And you're not going to get them at these big shows.
Oh no. Oh, they wouldn't dare.
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't dare at a big show.
But
And this was awesome as a big Harrison Ford fan to know
Yeah, why
that
not?
they let what's that?
Why not?
Yeah, they've told the story before
Yeah,
publicly,
they have
so
told the story, so.
It's apparently known that Harrison Ford has his own private blend of dope flown into him, and he smokes three joints a day. And I'm thinking, no wonder the guy is so cool.
Yeah.
No wonder he's so like anti, like the opposite of what you know of Hollywood to be.
Exactly.
I mean, so you know, that's why, because he's high as a kite all the time. That's
Yeah,
what he
and so Gerald, yeah, Gerald got to have one puff of that. That's what he did him in. Dickie's was
That's right. That's
whatever
right.
the stuntmen were passing around.
That's what it was. It was Harrison Ford's stash that caused him because it was such like high-end stuff. I guess he was used to the cheaper stuff.
When they were both saying that, like nowadays, it's so much better quality than what they had back in the day that it's just frightening.
Oh yeah. It was like as if we were having a conversation with Kevin Smith or something. Learning all these new facts about dope that we didn't know before.
Exactly. So
Oh goodness.
all in all, just fascinating stuff all the way around.
Oh, you know, you were bringing up the tunnel scene with when I was talking about entrapment. This will be like a fun little tidbit. You kind of touched on it, Cole, but Dickie was saying in The Last Crusade that scene where the Joneses steal the car and the guy's trying to put the hubcap on, they steal the car and they take off. Scene where they go into the tunnel. That's what you were referring to, Cole, that they go into the tunnel and the plane follows them, it wrecks and the wings fly off and the cockpit or the body of the plane.
Fuselage as they're coming through, yeah.
Yes, and then they come out the other side and the explosion happens behind them. He was saying that the tunnel they used dead ends. So what they
Oh,
had
that's
was they
right.
used the trick that Cole was mentioning earlier where they filmed them going in to the tunnel and then had to reverse it, use the same opening but from the other angle as they left. And what they had to do with the car was modify it where they had to move the steering
Oh,
wheel
that's right.
one side
Yes.
to the
Because of the
other.
British car. Yeah.
Because,
That's
yeah,
right.
whatever car was, I guess it was on the right, they had to jerry-rig it to where it was now on the left. So that way, when they drove it out, it would
Everything would be
match.
properly oriented. That's right.
Yes. Well, he said where they fell short of doing that trick was on one of the, was it the James Bond movies?
Yes, it's
Was
Diamonds Are Forever. There's a famously a scene where
Why
that
don't you tell?
same
Because
trick,
I'm not familiar with the scene.
yeah, essentially because you're basically shooting everything one direction, and
Yes.
then you just reverse, you move your camera over to the other side for the other, the leaving aspect of things, and there's the scene in Diamonds Are Forever as they're terracing through Vegas and Bond puts the car up on two wheels to go down a narrow alleyway. But when they reversed the angle coming out the other side, of course, when you're down level, it's the same idea. The steering wheel is suddenly on the wrong side. Everything's on the wrong side.
Sure, yeah.
And they realize this, and because they do all of back then, they did all of the shots of everybody in the car, with a rear projection screen. They always had that awkward looking, like they're driving in front of a film. They essentially what they did was just move. Was shoot a thing where it's like he's brought it up on the right side of the car to go in. Then they shot a little sequence where it's like, okay, now we're dropping. It's suddenly wide enough. We're dropping down back on four wheels, and now we're going to put it up on the other two wheels.
That was to
So
correct their mistake.
when it comes out, then it works properly.
But they had to do that because when they filmed it not thinking of the reverse
Yeah,
angle, and it
they
was on the wrong
realized
wheels
how to
coming
walk.
out.
And your brain immediately says, okay, that's completely wrong.
Yeah, and so their only way of fixing it was to put in the scene of it dropping down, then popping up again, which, again, at what point between the buildings did it widen enough to
Exactly. I know
Was there like a courtyard, an inner courtyard
it's
between the
the
two buildings that he?
stupid little trick, and they get away
Oh
with it
gosh.
because it's a Bond film and everything's over the top, but it's just so ridiculous. It's hilarious.
Needless to say, these gentlemen were just chock-a-block full of
Oh,
stories. So, like,
we
we call the
spent
same.
an hour this morning before we recorded this show t on the live show talking or this afternoon about everything we could about Infinicon, and as much as we could squeeze in about Gerald and Dickie, we've done this again, and there's still tales to tell. And I think every now and again on the live show, we'll probably bring in another tale of Dickie and Gerald.
I like that. It's
Right. But again, I don't think we could reiterate enough how much fun it is to be able to get that intimately involved with the celebrity guests. And also, as I said on the live show, get involved with local conventions because you never know where it'll take you. I 13 years ago, Catherine and I were the only dealer that didn't back out of Alcon 2005. And that led to pioneering game shows the next year, to becoming a contributor in increasingly larger capacity, becoming a department head, a staffer, and having I run the entire game show track now, and never saw that coming.
And again, to touch on how intimate these two particular conventions are and why you've got to go. These at the big corporation-driven events, people want to make a big deal about, oh, I got my picture taken with, Chris Evans, and it only cost $200. Well, what you got to realize, you're not only are you shelling out like ridiculous amounts of money, you're being ushered in for a mere few seconds, snap photo and off.
Yeah, it's like sit,
Exit stage
snap out.
right.
Sit, snap out. Sit, snap out. It's become a factory
Yes. What,
situation.
and in this situation, you get to spend such intimate moments with these guys and these ladies who come in as guests. You honestly walk away from the convention of the end of the weekend feeling that you're actual friends with them. Like, they may very well recognize you at the next AllCon that they come to because you've spent so much time talking with them, and you spend so much time where they're asking you personal questions about, well, what do you do, and what, about your wife, and this and that and the other, and what is it like living in Texas? It's I can't stress how intimate it can get with these people. And in my mind, as a fan, I would much rather walk away having spent real quality time with a person, well over shelling out money to have my picture taken with someone who I didn't have an intimate moment with.
Yeah, you get like a few seconds there
Yeah, and to me, that
with your butt
far,
5 inches from theirs.
and that far outweighs, doing that. So, I can't stress enough why you can't miss these shows.
That's right. And I want to say, even though they probably never hear this show, but Dickie and Gerald, to thank them again, because it was just such a wonderful experience to moderate those panels. I'm glad that Eddie got to be a part of that
Yeah.
because I really wanted him to experience just a little bit of what I got to do over the course of that weekend. And I can't wait for AllCon 2017. I can't wait for Infinicon 2017,
Oh my
all of these
gosh, I
upcoming
know.
opportunities.
I know.
There's just so much amazing coming in here in Texas. And both of those shows will be at the Crowne Plaza in Addison, Texas. So as soon as you can, buy your passes. I'm telling you will not be sorry. And on average, you're talking about like somewhere between $40 and $50 for a 3 or 4 day pass, depending on the.
A weekend pass.
Yeah,
That's how much you pay for one day at a big show now.
exactly. And you get something on the order of 16, 18 hours of programming, 20 hours of programming.
Yes.
There's so much going on that you're paying for one time. And I can't officially say this. The Crowne Plaza apparently got really dicky lately and they charge you to park. AllCon 2017, free parking. It is official.
Wow.
If you go to AllCon 2017, the parking, it's all covered.
Nice.
They'd made an arrangement with the hotel, so I can officially say that. We know that much right now.
That's cool. That's a convention that cares about its attendees.
Yes, and that's the other thing is they're doing what they can to
Who knows who listens to the show? Who wants to be offended by me saying that? I could give a damn.
Yeah.
But all con, these people care about their attendees.
Yeah, they are absolutely thrilled for you to be there, and if you get in on volunteering for them, you're volunteering for people who give a damn about their volunteers as well.
Yes,
And at the end of
yes.
the weekend, they throw a big party that is for volunteers only, and they give away some amazing stuff to their volunteers only. And so be sure, and if you get a chance, volunteer at these shows, especially ones like HoloCon and Finicon. And even LubaCon, I don't know what the experience is like for that show, since that's very far afield for me to be intimately involved. But
But
they've
I
got
will
a
say
lot of
this.
volunteers who seem to be having an absolute blast, and that's where you can tell when you go to a show and their volunteers are just, I don't know, show volunteers look like they're having a lot of fun, then you know that that's a show where they care about their volunteers.
We can say this about Lubicon. They did treat us like royalty as an artist and as a vendor. They gave the first day of check-in, they gave us a care package with
Oh, yes.
antibacterial wipes, a pen, mints, Post-it notes, tape. They brought us lunch and good lunch. It was
And
like a perfect.
I can say this because I do have this officially. One of the things that Danae Griffith, who's one of the she's like literally the driving force behind that show. There's a lot of people involved, but she was in here in the Dallas area, pounding a pavement a year before the first show earlier this year, and she was at our at the Jedi Cole Universe Comic Toy and Collectible Swap Meet. And Catherine put together little care packages for our vendors. And one of the things I loved that Danae did was to go to a lot of conventions and borrow the things that worked
Yes, yes.
for them. And I always tell people, if you're going to try to put on a convention, see what other conventions are doing and borrow the best aspects that work for you. Don't
Oh,
just
yeah.
copy everything because you're going to do it wrong. But copy the things that will work for your show. And she actually told us that she kind of stole that from
Oh,
from
nice.
Comic Toy Collectible Swap Meet. But we were like, hey, please do. I think everyone should be doing that.
That is true because even back in the day when we were doing our shows with Eric Shirey at the Logos Youth Center in Grand
Yeah.
Prairie, yeah, I remember, Cole, you would always have like a cooler of
Yeah,
drinks
we have
and
the super
waters
secret cooler of drinks and
for the for
soft
the
drinks and water.
yeah, for all the vendors and artists. So that was always cool. I will say this also, we're hoping that anybody listening to this podcast is also watching the live broadcast, but if for any other reason, make sure you watch today's companion episode of the live broadcast to this podcast for the visual of our good friend Gerald Holm as Mr. Muscle.
Oh yes, you
And
don't want to
I'll
miss
leave it
out
at
on
that.
you don't want to miss out on Mr. Muscle.
I'll leave it there.
And finally, I just want to, as we did on the live show today, we want to say our farewells to Kenny Baker, who we lost, the Star Wars community lost one of our big, the bigger guns in Kenny. And if you're not already following Peter Mayhew on Facebook, on his Peter's Dash Angie Mayhew is how they're listed. I think that the feed is still visible even if you're not friended by them. But I did want to, I thought this was really touching. I just wanted to read this on the show. Post that Peter made on the 15th of August. He said, "I know I'm a bit late with this, but my sadness is profound and no words seemed adequate to convey what we collectively and I personally have lost with the passing of my dear friend Kenny Baker. Kenny and I became fast friends the first time we met and formed a lifelong bond after realizing we had so much in common. Although people like to contrast the difference in our heights, we found that we shared many of the same struggles, from finding clothes, driving cars, and fitting into airplane seats, to health issues and the ever-constant stares of strangers. We understood each other on a level that few others can. I'm so very glad I got to spend time with him in London earlier this month," which, by the way, was really remarkable. Kenny Baker, despite failing health, was at Celebration Europe earlier in the month. His talent and his wicked sense of humor never diminished, even as his health did. Even ever the showman, Kenny was always eager to meet his fans, and the decades we knew each other, I never met anyone who enjoyed the public more. For all the joy he brought this world on the screen and off, I give my thanks and a final farewell to my little friend with a giant heart who's gone too soon. Rest in peace, Kenny." And I
And
thought that was just such a wonderful tribute. I wanted to share that.
now he was 81, is that correct?
Yes, I believe that is correct.
Yeah, 81. I think originally the news outlets, because they can't get anything right, said 83. But yeah, Kenny was an amazing person, and as promised on today's live show, when it was revealed on earlier today that I had not seen Time Bandits, I made the promise to the viewers that I would watch it today. I'm happy to say I'm halfway through Time Bandits. As soon as we're done recording, I'm going to go finish it.
Oh, I had to interrupt your
So
Time Bandits.
far, I'm loving it. I am loving
And
it.
I'm going to come
Can't
out
wait
in
to pass.
solidarity here, and I'm going to track down Time Bandits and watch it again because I have not seen it in 30 something years.
Oh, it is something else. It is something else. I got to ask, Fidget, Kenny Baker's character,
Yes.
is the dome, the spaghetti noodle, what is it, a strainer? Is the strainer that he wears on his head, is that a nod to R2-D2?
I honestly don't know if there's ever been anything officially said about that,
That's the first thing I thought of when he popped onto
but
the screen.
that almost had to be a costumer's something that the costumers did deliberately.
I mean,
Because it's just such a decided,
yes.
that costume could have been put on any one of the characters and would have worked.
I mean, a
But to
silver dome on top
Yeah,
of the head.
that had to be a bit of a
I thought
nod.
that's got to be a nod to R2-D2, and if so, I love this movie even more.
Well, excellent, and we've run probably rather long, but we had a lot of ground to cover, and we still, as we said, have not covered all of the stories that were there that we want to share with you about the amazing Infinicon experience. About There's just so many wonderful convention memories, and I'm so happy I get to share them with so many people. And especially a big thank you to everybody who attended Infinicon. We absolutely It was wonderful audiences that we got to play to, and we just had a blast. And as for this show, we'll be back in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense, and also see you on the live show over at watchonairlive.com on the first and third Sunday of every month. We're back in the saddle now, and we've got some great stuff coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Any final Infinicon thoughts before we head our way?
Oh, gosh, just go.
I like that. Just go.
Well, I mean, because I cannot say enough good about it. And if I get going again, it's going to be a whole nother hour of a
That's
podcast
true. So we better wrap her on up right now, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with your favorite Star Wars guys and our traditional simple tricks and nonsense. Good
Good
night,
night,
everybody.
everybody.